Hello and welcome to the RCGP podcast. My name is Dr. Thomas Round, and today I'm talking to Dr. Shrey Mathur, a GP in East London, a researcher at Queen Mary with an interest in HIV early diagnosis. Thank you, Shrey, for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tom.
And today we're recording a podcast about HIV and the important role of primary care. How did you get interested in this area?
So I'm an academic GP. I'm working in East London. It's a really diverse and vibrant community. I've been working with research teams in London and in Zimbabwe to improve HIV care for children in rural and underserved settings. Really excited to talk about HIV today because I think it's an area where we can have a really big impact in primary care, all the way from early diagnosis through long-term management.
A budding GP in East London, so great to have you with us today, Shrey. Just a little refresher of what we mean by HIV, maybe a little bit of the historical context.
So HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, so is a retrovirus that attacks the immune system. So what it's doing is it's targeting CD4 cells. These are the white blood cells that coordinate our immune response. So people can acquire HIV through unprotected sex, shared needles, or perinatally. HIV then progresses through some stages. So initially through a seroconversion illness for a few weeks, it's like a flu-like illness. After that is an asymptomatic phase where people might feel well for years. And then comes a symptomatic phase. So people might have constitutional symptoms like fever and weight loss or minor opportunistic infections like shingles or oral thrush. If left untreated, then it progresses to advanced HIV disease or AIDS, where the body can no longer fight infections or cancers. And these collectively are known as AIDS-defining conditions. I think, Tom, you mentioned also, I think the historical overview is, and that's why I wanted to stress the if left untreated bit. So historically, HIV was a devastating diagnosis. We know limited treatment options, really high mortality, of course. However, with modern antiretroviral therapy, care has been completely transformed. And I think it's also transformed the way we think about HIV. Really key point here is for people who are diagnosed early and who are on effective antiretroviral therapy, HIV is a chronic manageable condition with near normal life expectancy.
I mean, that's a huge change. I mean, over our lifetime, you know, sort of thinking about the potential death sentence of a diagnosis in 80s and even 90s.
Yeah, really big change, I think, for everybody, all the way from patients to healthcare providers, just to kind of reframe our thinking now.
And what's the current context of UK infections?
So in the UK, there are more than 100,000 people living with HIV, and we know that all-cause mortality is still happening. So for people with HIV, this is around 740 deaths from last year. I think a really key figure for us in primary care is that there are nearly 5,000 people who remain undiagnosed. And this is really important because people who are undiagnosed are not receiving treatment, are at risk of serious illness, and may unknowingly pass HIV on to others.
I think it's important to get away from potential bias within this population, think about key populations and high-risk groups for testing, but also to reduce stigma.
Exactly. I think it's okay to think a little bit about higher prevalence groups. So that traditionally has been men who have sex with men, sex workers, people who inject drugs. But really important, I think, for our listeners today is to think a bit more broadly. Think about more individual history, local prevalence rates, and then have a really low threshold for testing HIV when it's clinically plausible.
Thinking about stigma and how we might reduce that.
So that's a real concern, even in primary care settings. So stigma prevents people from accessing care and staying in care. So what we really need is a person-centered approach with person-first language. So a great resource for that to help guide person-first language is the People First Charter. And I think a really key message for us here and for our listeners and to champion and reinforce as well is U equals U. That's undetectable equals untransmissible. And what that means is that a person living with HIV who's on effective ART and maintaining an undetectable viral load cannot pass on HIV sexually. And that's really important for people living with HIV because this U equals U or another formulation is can't pass it on. That message can really transform the way people feel about themselves and their relationship.
That's really important. Thank you, Shrey. And then reflecting back on early detection, why that's important, I think we touched on that a little bit about sort of getting earlier treatment, better outcomes, less transmission. Thinking also about when to test in general practice, if we can reflect on that a little bit more.
So I think there's a couple ideas here around testing in general practice. I think the main message is to test routinely, test early, and to normalize testing. And normalizing testing is a powerful tool to reduce stigma and pick up diagnoses earlier. So in terms of when to test, we found that there's a bit of misaligned testing. So in primary care, we tend to test younger patients more often, but new HIV diagnoses are proportionately more common in older age groups and in Black African communities. So we can do a better job about aligning testing.
What about late diagnoses? Are there any sort of particular issues around that?
Yeah, I think this is a really key area where we in primary care can have a really big impact. I think first to define it, so late diagnosis is defined as a CD4 count below 350 or presenting with an AIDS-defining illness. We know that people with late diagnoses are 10 times more likely to die within a year of diagnosis. And we know, unfortunately, that late diagnosis is still really common. Around 40% of new cases in England were diagnosed late, as I mentioned. So that's groups we might not always think to test. So older patients, Black African heterosexuals, people presenting with conditions we might put down to something else.
You touched a little bit around that, but when to test in general practice, so we said having that low threshold, you know, what are the sort of top tips about testing, thinking about our local prevalence in primary care?
Yeah, exactly. So for routine testing, it's based on the local HIV prevalence. So if you're in an area where HIV prevalence is greater than 2 per 1,000 adults, guidelines from BIVA, that's the British HIV Association, and NICE recommend opt-out testing. So opt-out meaning it's offered to everyone as part of routine care. To know your local prevalence, there's a helpful tool, which is called HIV Lens. I think really worthwhile for our listeners to have a look at their local data. In terms of when it should happen, so routine testing should happen at new patient registration and then during blood tests if somebody hasn't had an HIV test in the past 12 months.
And that's again around removing that stigma within your own practice. You know, there's a lot we can do as GPs with our teams as well.
Exactly. So just normalizing the testing, make it a routine test.
Also, I think in some areas, they obviously it depends on the access to sexual health services. I know in London, people can access online testing for home testing as well.
That's exactly right. So beyond offering testing in primary care, local sexual health services, as you say, Tom, can offer it. There are postal self-test kits as well. I think really exciting in the new HIV action plan for England, there's a plan to trial HIV testing through the NHS app. So I think that's really helpful, especially for people who might still be feeling that stigma or might be hesitant to ask for testing. I think it offers more routes, and the more routes we offer, the more people we can reach.
We talked a little bit about symptomatic clinical testing. We mentioned unexplained weight loss, shingles at a young age, maybe unexplained infections.
That's right. So I think overall message, we should have a low threshold for symptomatic testing. And these are so-called indicator conditions. So the NICE clinical knowledge summary has a really nice summary of this. But we're thinking about unexplained weight loss, shingles in somebody under 50, recurrent or unexplained infections, lymphadenopathy, or chronic skin conditions. I remember as a registrar picking up a new case of HIV by doing an HIV test for somebody who had psoriasis that just wasn't getting better. If something isn't adding up clinically, if you have an explanation that doesn't quite fit, I think I would put HIV in my differential.
That's really helpful. Thank you. It's one of those things about we sort of test, the majority will be negative, but then when we do get the positive test, how do we then manage that in primary care? I guess in a very sensitive way and help with the referral to sexual health services.
Exactly. So I think one thing HIV specialist colleagues often stress is that negative test is a really important opportunity just to reinforce some ideas around safe sexual practices and testing. I think for positive results, important for us in primary care to convey the information sensitively, refer urgently to specialist HIV services. I think important here is also for us to recognize that around 5% of people living with HIV are not engaged with specialist services. So I think we in primary care are really well positioned, given our relationships with our patients, to address barriers and help patients re-engage with care as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important, is having that continuity and that relationship-based care with people and reducing that stigma.
Exactly.
Moving on, so maybe we've done tests that come back positive, we've engaged with the patient, referred to specialist services. Then there's that kind of issue around the transfer of care and that sort of communication between specialist and primary care and the role of the GP in that.
I think for managing HIV care, we're working in conjunction with our specialist colleagues. And I think there's been a lot of effort put in to help with that information sharing as well from both sides. I think in terms of our primary care role, is that fundamental shift in mindset that we should start thinking of HIV just like any other long-term condition we manage for our patients, like diabetes, COPD. So have these structured reviews, managing risk factors, comorbidities.
Exactly. You know, historically, maybe it's up to the patient if they want that information shared with the GP. We're hoping that patients feel more comfortable sharing that information and their sort of letters with their medications. And I think a key thing for us as GPs is to code the information, but also to code and add on medications, particularly if we might have any interactions with these antiretroviral medications.
That's exactly right. I agree completely, Tom. I think you often say coding is caring, isn't it? So that's absolutely right to add those to our records, because I think a big safety issue with people who are taking HIV medications are the drug interactions.
of course, for anyone listening in primary care, we wouldn't be commissioned or trained to prescribe these medications in general practice. It would be via specialist care, but you could have those, for example, on your electronic health records as automatic hospital-only medications. But at least then it's kind of coded on, and then it will flag up if there's any interactions, hopefully. I think that's another clinical top tip. And then, yeah, what happens if we know the patient that does have HIV, we know they're on antiretrovirals, we've updated what medication they're on. I guess it can be quite complicated because there's lots of brands and generics, and sometimes it can get quite complicated. Any top tips around some medications and checking interactions?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really sensible to be aware of these interactions. And I think it's a really rapidly evolving field in terms of research, and the medications are changing quite often. And I think a big issue is that there's a lot of interactions, as we mentioned, but interactions with medications we commonly use in primary care. So proton pump inhibitors, oral contraceptives, statins. So I think a really good thing to do is to check interactions. So a really go-to resource for this is the Liverpool HIV Drug Interactions Tool. I think it's really sensible to bookmark that. Save it to your browser for quick access. You can check the generic name, the branded name of the medications, and it'll tell you about any prescribing information that you need.
I have used it in my practice and I found it really helpful. And actually what I've done with some patients is actually have the medication that linked in as a sort of prompt on their medications homepage to prompt people to check. So I think that can be really useful. And obviously there's loads of different medications, so it's quite useful to do it with the patient and they go through the meds, because sometimes we don't have an up-to-date list of the medications they're on either. So it can be very helpful in that context. Thinking of the important role of primary care and cardiovascular risk, so we talk about primary risk and we do the health checks, don't we, every couple of years over 40. I think there's an important role here as well as our cardiovascular risk scores, for example, Q-Risk. As I understand, they underscore the risk in HIV.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I think cardiovascular risk is another area where we can be are really well situated in primary care and can be really proactive. I think there's a couple bits to pull together there. So we know that people living with HIV have roughly twice the risk of cardiovascular disease. It's 1.6 to 2 times. We know that, as you've mentioned, Tom, that the standard cardiovascular risk calculators, so Q-Risk 3, for example, they underestimate risk for people living with HIV. And then a third bit there is that there's been this very large multi-center trial, that's the REPRIEVE trial, that showed that statins reduce major cardiovascular events for people living with HIV. So I think if we pull all of that together, we know there's a higher risk in this population, we know that the risk calculators underestimate risk, and we know that statins are effective in reducing major cardiovascular events. We can tie that all together, and the new PIVA, British HIV Association guidance, does that. And so it advises for anybody over 40 years old living with HIV that they be offered a statin. So it's for primary prevention, so it's atorvastatin 20, irrespective of the calculated cardiovascular risk score. Of course, alongside this, we're doing all the other bits and addressing all the usual modifiable risk factors. So smoking, blood pressure, diabetes, mental health. And mental health, of course, is important as well, because the rates of depression and anxiety are also higher for people living with HIV.
So we could use that's really a good opportunity to engage with thinking about other risk factors, other long-term conditions. And then, as you say, irrespective of Q-Risk, anyone with HIV above 40, we'd think of those people as high risk and potentially to offer them a statin or try and encourage them to take a statin.
Exactly. I think that's a key takeaway in my change practice. I often rely very much on the Q-Risk 3, but I think it's important to know that it underestimates risk in this group, and the guidance is just around age 40 or more is where statins should be offered.
Just think about what changed in HIV diagnosis and management. So some of the listeners may have heard of PEP and PrEP and maybe some of these newer long-acting injectables, but if you can just go through some of that with us.
I think a really exciting time in terms of HIV research, and a lot has changed recently, especially around HIV prevention, which has really moved forward. I think two things that in primary care that we should know about, so is PEP and then PrEP as well. Mm-hmm. So PEP is post-exposure prophylaxis. So this needs to be taken within 72 hours of potential exposure. It's a short course of antiretrovirals, which can prevent infection if it's started early enough. And it's available through A&E and local sexual health services as well. And then the other part to that is PrEP, so pre-exposure prophylaxis. So this means pre, so it's taken by people who don't have HIV but are at risk of acquiring it. And we know it's really highly effective. In trials, it's around 99%. In real-world data with good adherence, PrEP reduces HIV acquisition by around 86%. So patients can take it as a daily tablet or an event-based tablet. In the UK, usually people can access it through sexual health clinics. There are online sources as well. Sexual health clinics, it's really great because along with patients coming in to collect their PrEP, they often have chances to do some of the regular monitoring bits as well. So HIV tests, sexual health screens, and then the renal function tests. And that usually happens every 3 to 6 months. Now, the most common formulation available available in the UK is Truvada. So that's tenofovir disoproxil with emtricitabine. Often, again, it's one of those medications that we're not necessarily prescribing in primary care, but it's good to be aware of. And if you know that your patient's good to add it to their medications list, good to code it as well.
I think that's really important. And I think, you know, that real world data showing it really does reduce the risk of HIV infection. I've heard recently about some of these trials of long acting injectable agents. So anything you can tell us about that?
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting new frontier for treatment and really has the potential to transform care for people living with HIV, potential transform both PrEP and then HIV treatment itself. So these are long-acting injectables. So rather than taking a daily tablet, patients are now having injections. So usually, for example, for carbotegravir, it's about every 2 months. This is, again, done by specialist services. And it's exciting because it can significantly reduce pill burden and then help with adherence as well. And same thing as some of the other medications. It's not something that we're necessarily initiating, but it's good to be aware of and code as well.
Thinking about some top tips into practice, particularly for GP colleagues.
Yeah, I think a couple of key takeaways or top tips for us in primary care. So big one is to normalize HIV testing. So test routinely, test early, offer routine HIV testing in high preference areas. You can check your local data on HIV lens and don't be afraid or embarrassed to ask about that either. And I think the other bit that comes into normalizing it is integrating HIV into chronic disease management. So reframing HIV as a long-term condition, proactively addressing those mental and physical health bits that we've talked about, reinforcing those messages, U equals U, can't pass it on, to address stigma and empower patients. I think it's a really powerful thing we can do. Reducing cardiovascular risk is another one. So we know, as we mentioned, so people over 40 with HIV should be offered a statin, irrespective of Q risk. Mm-hmm. And then prescribing safely as well. So coding HIV status, that's the coding is caring, but isn't it, Tom? And then medication status and medications into the record. Checking for interactions, that's the Liverpool HIV drugs interactions tool. So I think lots of important resources, I think, worth sharing with our listeners as well and for those key websites.
Thank you, Shrey. Really good top tips. And I think also just to reflect on, don't feel embarrassed about asking a sexual history, because I think if you're embarrassed, then the patient will feel embarrassed. So just normalize asking about what's your sex life like. The very open questions. How do you enjoy sex in a very neutral, non-judgmental way, I think is really helpful.
I think that makes a really big difference for everyone involved. I think that helps with the stigma, the fear of judgment, normalizes it. I think it really helps build that rapport with our patients as well. We can really build opportunities to develop those relationships and explore some areas that we might miss otherwise.
And so if GP colleagues are interested in learning more, I think you mentioned about the British HIV Association, got some tools on there. Any of the resources that you'd recommend?
I think BIVA guidance is really helpful. The NICE clinical knowledge summary is fantastic as well. And then I think some of the resources that we spoke about, so HIV lens for your local prevalence data, the drug interactions tool as well, I think are really, really helpful. And then I think there's a lot of patient-facing charities that have really helpful information as well. And they can help with some of the language, some of the more challenging conversations. There's some really helpful videos that we can watch. And I think that really helps us navigate a subject where we might just be a little bit less comfortable and helps build that confidence.
Yeah, I think some trainee GPs do placements in sexual health clinics, but I'm sure, you know, if you're not a trainee and you're interested, I'm sure you can reach out to your local sexual health clinic to learn more, maybe some shared learning. I think that's really helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Our local sexual health service, really accessible, really friendly. And then even for our HIV specialist colleagues, really friendly team, easy phone call, just specialist registrar, often very, very helpful and very responsive as well. So I think lots of support for areas that might be a bit out of our comfort zone.
Thanks so much, Shrey, for joining us. I really enjoyed our discussion. Please do have a look at the RCGP website for more resources. We're also hoping to have a British Journal of General Practice article published. So we'll post that in the links when that comes available as well, talking in a bit more detail about some of the issues we've chatted through today. But yeah, thank you very much, Shrey.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tom. Thank you.
And you were listening to the RCGP podcast. Many thanks for listening.